You stop and you think about events in your life that really help you be Bible students. If we have time tonight, I want to talk about three events in my life that changed my life and learning how to study the Bible. One of them was when I was about maybe 6 or 7 years old. I'm not sure. We have any six-year-olds here tonight? What happened to Lucas? And where's Levi? Where are my special guys here tonight? 6 or 7 years of age. A thing happened to me in a Bible study when I was 7 years old that changed my life. I'm going to tell you about it. And then I'd been preaching I'd been a missionary for 7 years, and I met an individual at a Christian camp, and what he said changed the way, really solidified how I studied the Bible. The other one, and I don't know if we'll have time to hear, is when as a young preacher, I couldn't find anybody to study with except Jehovah's Witnesses. They'll always study with anybody. They'll come knocking on your doors, and if you find one of those, they'll sit down and study with you. And Seventh-day Adventists were much the same way in the setting in which I was. And we'd get in a Bible study, and I thought I was a pretty good Bible student. I'd been to a Christian college, I've got all this education. And I'd get in a Bible study, and they would nail my hide to the wall. Why? Because I didn't know how to study the Bible. And that's what I want us to do tonight. I want us to look at three verses of Scripture. Go ahead and put that first verse of Scriptures up. I hope you can read that. Can you read that? Is that large enough for you to read the print? You shake or nod. Can you read that print? You say, all right, I got thumbs up like this, or whatever that is. That's thumbs up, but I got this. We'll take that as something you're able to read. I'd been a missionary for 7 years and came back to the States. I was at a Christian camp. It was called Camp Casey. And it was a great camp. We had 300 campers. Can you imagine having a camp with 300 campers? And probably had, 75 or more staff that was there. It was a large camp. And one night after the camp had quietened down, there was a brother that was there. His name was Hudson Nichols. You may know the Nichols name, because you've heard it. There was a Gus Nichols. There was a Hardiman Nichols who preached here. There was a Flavel Nichols who was the oldest of all of the Hardiman preachers, at least sons of Gus Nichols. And then there's Hudson Nichols, the unknown Nichols. And so we're sitting around. It's probably 11:30, 12. It might be one of those nights that the camp got quieter a little bit earlier than that, as the camp gets longer, they stay up later every night, so it could have been 1 o'clock. And Hudson says, Dan, I want you to read this verse. And I want you to tell me what this verse says. And so I read it. Now look, I've been a missionary. I'm not a bad Bible student. I've been a missionary. And I said, that verse says that if you want to go to heaven, you've got to be baptized. And he said, let me look at it. He said, that's not what it says. Well, I thought I knew the answer. Dan, what does this verse say? And I says, it says that you've got to be immersed if you want to go to heaven. And he said, that's not what it says. Isn't that an amazing thing? And it took me forever to learn how to answer his question. Now, I'm not going to do with you what happened to me. But what does this verse say? Does this verse say that if you're not baptized, you cannot go to heaven? And if I'd said that to Hartman, they said, that's not what it does. That's not what it says. And then we got, after we'd gone through it all, and I finally figured out how to answer his question. He says, okay, what does it imply? Now, there's a lot of implications in this verse. It implies some things, and usually when we look at a verse, we'd say, and we give the answer to what it implies. Isn't that amazing? And then about 3 or 4 a.m., he says, Dan, what does it not say? And I worked through it, and then he would say, last question, Dan, what does it not imply? Do you know what this verse says? It took me a long time to state what this verse says. You know what it says? He who believes and is baptized shall be saved. But he who does not believe shall be condemned. Isn't that simple? Do you want to know where denominational errors come from? Do you want to know where diversities of beliefs come from? One of my early experiences, I'll go back to an early time in New Zealand. I'd been in New Zealand for about 2 weeks. And I was there with one of the young men of the church. His name was Rex Merrick. He's still alive, still a great servant of God there in New Zealand. He's getting old, by the way, because he was as old as I was when I met him. But he carried me downtown. Maybe it was even his other brother, Peter, that was older than him. Anyway, we went downtown, and he introduced me to one of his friends. And he said, I just love hearing Americans talk. Would you talk? I looked at Peter, I said, what do I talk about? He said, why don't you talk about Mark 16:16? 22, 23 years of age. And I talked about what Mark 16:16 says. And then he said, hang on a minute. You're not punctuating that correctly. He who believes, comma, and is baptized, comma, shall be saved. Now, if you take out the parts between the commas, then you'll understand what this verse says. Leave out the parts between the commas, and it says, he who believes shall be saved. What's wrong with that? Well, first of all, where are the commas? And what rule of grammar ever says what is found between the commas is not necessary? How do you answer that? I said, well, if you could do that, I would say, he who, comma, believes and, comma, is baptized shall be saved. Now you take out the parts that are not necessary between the commas, and it says, he who is baptized shall be saved. He said, you can't do that. All I had done. Do you know how to solve the question here about what this verse says? I challenge you in your Bible study to read a verse and not state what that verse means. I've done this in Bible classes over and over again. Monday night classes, we've done some of it, and Tuesday morning class, we've done it perhaps even less. But isn't it amazing? We decide what we want a verse to say, and then we quote the verse. Why would we not just look at that verse and see what that verse says? Now then, it can imply some things, but they've got to be necessary implications. And by that I mean, the words themselves must imply that. Does it imply that he who believes and is baptized will go to heaven? Yes. That's not what it says. You can take the rest of the Bible and look at salvation and all that is involved in salvation, and that is the thing that is implied. He who believes and is baptized will go to heaven. That's not what it says, is it? And we sat all night long. All of a sudden, the sun was coming up, the camp was waking up, and it was time to go eat breakfast. And he and I, the time had just flown. I mean, 6-7 hours had just flown with him drilling me. Not just this verse, but so many other verses. And so when you read a verse, what does it say? What does it not say? Comma, comma. That's one of the things, isn't it? You would answer that. Doesn't take a rocket scientist to be able to deal with that. And it is true that he who believes and is baptized will go to heaven. Yeah, I believe that. That's not what it says. What does it say? It says what it says, and you'd better really be sure that the implication is there before you make an implication beyond that. Let me see. I found something in this building. Lucas, can you read pretty good? Lucas, close your eyes. I don't want you to see what's here, okay? I want everybody else to see. Don't look. Don't peep, Lucas. Don't you peep. If you peep, okay, here's what it says. Okay, Lucas, open your eyes.
His health do not use or serve grape or red drinks of any kind. They stain the...
Isn't that amazing? They stained the carpet. You know where I found this? Have you seen this sign? Have you ever seen this sign? It's been in this building for 20 years. You've never seen it. Well, let me tell you. Wait a minute, Caleb. You know where I found it? I found it in the kitchen in there where sometimes they prepare the Lord's Supper. And we've got a sign in the room where the Lord's Supper is that says, do not use grape juice. Is that what it implies? Is that what it means? That's a hard question, isn't it? But you see the problem? Here's the sign in a place where, right up here, we've got the trays here. We got grape juice. And you know what they believe down there at the Palm Beach Lake Church of Christ? You can't have grape juice in the Lord's Supper. Is that what it says? There is a context. I've talked about, and you've heard me say this, three rules of understanding any difficult verses in the Bible are as simple as A, B, C. Look at the verses above it. Look at the verses that are below it. And look at the context in which it's found. Is this a true statement? Yeah, it's been in this building for 20 years. Why? There's a context. Where's it found? In a kitchen. In a kitchen where drinks are served, you know, but wait a minute. There's even helps us understand that. Is there anything in the context where I see this because they stained the carpet? You remember what we had when we built this building? We had green carpet. After, what was it, Steve? 5 years or something? We had green and stained carpet all over this building. Why? Because you can... No, you spill Diet Coke, it's okay, you can mop it up. Ever spill grape juice on you or something? Yeah, hard to get out. And it stained the carpet. There's a context in which this is found. Now, this is not a verse in the Bible, but it illustrates the context in which it's stated. And so, you read a verse that says, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Now, we're not going to look at that verse. Well, why don't you remember the Sabbath day? To whom was that said? The same answer. There's a verse in the Bible that says, build an ark. If you're going to go to heaven, you got to build an ark. No. There's a context. And you read the verses above that and the verses below that. You read the context in which it is found and you look at what the verse says. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy, for because you were a slave in Egypt. And God has given you a rest day. That's what it says. The Deuteronomy account says that. Deuteronomy chapter 5. Remember this. What's the Sabbath day? Rest day. Remember the rest day because you were a slave in Egypt. Is there an implication about slaves in Egypt? Yeah. They don't have a rest day. You remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy because you were a slave and God has given you a rest day. That's context. And so when you read the Bible, you've got to put it in the context in which it's found. I'm running out of time and I don't know what to do. Put the next verse up. You know this verse. Who says this? Well, it says, I say also unto you that you are Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church. That's the part of the phrase I want us to look at. You can look at every word on it. You can look at the word why it says, thou art Peter, and upon this rock, and you'll have a deeper understanding about the context in which it's found there. But let's just focus in on what this verse implies. I'm about 7 years of age and I'm trying to teach my friends. I said, the church that I'm a member is Jesus's church. And I use this verse, I will build my church. The church belongs to Jesus. I'd heard that at church. Don't tell me a six-year-old cannot get it. I got it and I was using it. And West Huntsville, right after the end of the Second World War, it ended in 45 and 46. We started building the building. By 48, we had the building. But it was in this period of time when I'm about 6 years of age. And he said, well, that wasn't your church. Jesus didn't build your church. And I said, oh, yes, he did. He said, I saw those men down there laying those bricks. I'm 6 years of age. And I thought, you know, he's right. Why? I didn't know definition of words. I will build my church. You know what it does not say? It does not say, I will build my church building. And so there's nothing in the context that's even talking about a building. But at 6 years of age, you're not real smart. And fortunately, I had a cousin. She's a whole lot better personal worker, and she just answered it just like that. That was just so great. I was sure glad she was there because I don't know what I would have said. But I learned how to read a verse. What does this verse say? I? Who's the I? Verses above it will tell you. Jesus said, I will build. What does the word will indicate? It implies it had not yet been built. The church of Jesus had not yet been built whenever he said, I will build my church. Church is not in the Old Testament. Jesus came and says, I will build my church. That's interesting, isn't it? It implies that he accomplished something when he lived on this earth and he built his church. It's his. And then it says, and the gates of hell, King James, gates of Hades, will not prevail against it. Now, if I don't know what Hades is, I'm in a bit of trouble trying to figure that out. But I could look up the word Hades, couldn't I? It's just a word. If I look up a dictionary of Greek words, it would tell me what this word means. And so I could figure that out. And whatever it is, whatever Hades is, it's not going to stop the building of the church. And then again, what does it say? I will build my church. What does it not say? I will build my churches. Isn't that amazing? When you read the Bible, take time to look at the context. Ever seen one of these? They're in this building. Any ideas? If you sit in a certain part of this building, you know exactly what it is. Johnny and Betty are sitting back there. Can you look down at Betty's feet and see what she's got? There's one back there. Guess what it says? It says Betty. What is this? Well, I guess when you eat, that's not what it is. It states what it is. It has a purpose. Now, if I don't know the context in which it's found, but those of you who've got short legs, guess what? It's not yours. Is that an implication? Does this have a context? I may not even know the context. I may have thought, she was out shopping one day, and you ought to go shopping with Carolyn. Whoever Carolyn is, you ought to go with Carolyn. You ought to go with her because she finds all sorts of good things. It doesn't imply that. It might be where it came from. It might be that she knew somebody who was really, really a good carpenter. It might be she doesn't want anybody else to use it. But that's not what it says. What does it say? Where's it come from? Well, if I ask you to look at the penmanship, do you know anybody in this church who can write like this? I do. And he's married to Betty. And there's one back there that says short-legged Betty has got one of these. Why? What's it for? It implies some things, doesn't it? You leave this building, you go outside. You're in the foyer out there, and there's a sign over there at that door just as you go out says, women. Does that imply something? Yeah. You know, now it does not just say, whoa, men. That's not what it says. That's not what the word means. Words have meaning, don't they? Wait a minute, it's plural. Can a plural word ever mean singular things? Sometimes we ask that question about the Bible, do we not? Elders got to have believing children. What if it just has one child? Well, you women may not understand this as much as men understand it, but when women go to the restroom, there are always two of them that go. You ever notice that in life? Huh? It's plural. No, it means singular. Isn't that amazing? We get that. We don't get it when it comes to that handicap stall, though. Isn't that amazing? We need to pay attention. Those of you who are not handicapped need to pay and have respect to those who are handicapped, because That big, large restroom, or in each of the individual restrooms at the end of the hallways and in the foyer, there are larger restrooms. They imply something, do they not? Yeah. Folks, here's all I'm saying. Use your brain. You figure it out, do you not? It means what it says. Put third verse up. Can you read that one? Yeah. What does it say? What does it imply? And if you'll learn how to do it, and the Seventh-day Adventists, and especially the Jehovah's Witness, taught me how to use this verse. Look at the last part of this. You got Revelation chapter 1 up there? Okay, there it is. That's the one I wanted you to look at. Okay, I wasn't distinct enough in what I said. Read the verse. And as you read it, what does it say? Just read verse 1. I know we got verse 3, got 3 verses. Just read the first verse. We don't have time. What does it say? What does it imply? You talk to Jehovah's Witnesses and they'll tell you, man, here's what this book is all about. Here's what the book of Revelation is all about. And people are doing this today, by the way. It's not just Jehovah's Witnesses. Everybody comes to the book and make it apply to everything. Are you aware that folks used to find the Second World War in the book of Revelation? When was that? Right during the time of the Second World War. People go to the book of Revelation and aren't they not finding what Russia is doing or what Iran or what the Muslims are doing or something like this? Yes. Are you aware there's a commentary that's been written, a commentary on the book of Revelation that found the American Civil War in it and found every battle between the North and the South in the War of Liberation, found every one of those battles, even found the generals. I guess you know who rode on the white horse, don't you? He's a good guy. Well, there's a guy in the southern side that rode a white horse, and his name was Robert E. Lee. Guess whose commentary? What is the book of Revelation all about? And once I got this verse, I might not be able to find every answer to every earthquake that the Jehovah's Witness could say. You know, in 1843, there was an earthquake that killed 353,000 people in Chinese. I made up the year and the number. But what's this verse all about? The revelation. You can't understand this book. Wait a minute. What does that word mean? The revelation of Jesus Christ comes from Jesus, which God gave him to show to his servants things which must shortly take place. You understand every word there? Here's a book. God said you can understand it. People have the attitude there are 66 books in the Bible and you can understand 65 of them, but here's one you cannot understand. Interesting enough, in the Greek, it's the first word in the Greek Bible, revelation. The revelation that Jesus sent to his servants about things which must shortly come to pass. And I'd say to Jehovah's Witnesses, I may not be able to answer everything you're saying, but I know what you're saying is not in verse 1. You read verse 1 and explain it to me. It's not the revelation of all the history until Jesus comes back. Why? It's a revelation of things which must shortly come to pass. What does the word shortly mean? I'll tell you what it doesn't mean. It doesn't mean longly. Isn't that amazing? It's not a history of mankind. It's not a history of all the wars. Cannot be that. And you want to look at the context? Look at verse 3. Blessed is he who reads and those who hear the words of the prophecy and keep the things that are written in it, because the time is at hand. Let's just read it. Let's define words. Let's put words in context. and we'll be able to understand it. I wish I had 3 hours. I don't have it. I'm not going to take it. But would you take something home with you tonight? When I read the verse in the Bible, what does it say? It's the hardest thing to get Christians to do. They want to explain what it means. And if the words that the text use state that, that is exactly what it means. For words have meaning. There's a context, ABC, above it, below it, and the context of it all, just like the grape juice signs. They have a meaning. And they mean what they say. Well, would it be all right if Carolyn's not here for somebody else to use this? Well, we've got more than one Carolyn in this church. And you'd have to know which Carolyn it was before you could just immediately say, I know she wants to share that with just anybody. And I know that about the Carolyn who this thing belongs to. But that's not what it says. Use your brain. The Bible wasn't written for theologians. It was written for common, ordinary people. And when you read a verse, I'm not going to keep you up all night. What does it say? What does it not say? What does it emphatically imply? Not that I might guess it could be and applied to. That's what you do with Revelation. Well, it could mean this. Okay, it could mean that. Just like it could mean you'd better not use this. That's not what it says. What does it say? What does it imply? What does it not imply? That's it. What's the purpose of the lesson? To help you understand how to study the Bible. And Caleb, you're old enough to do that. You're old enough to read, he who believes and is baptized shall be saved. You're old enough to read, I will build my church. I'm 6 years of age. I don't know what a church is. I know now. It's people. Define words. Look at the context in which it's found. And then believe what those words say. That's how you study the Bible. And difficult verses will become so much easier to understand. It took me from midnight till sunrise to look at about 2 verses is all we looked at. But I figured out how to do it. And it's so simple. Jonah, I almost let you be the star of this sermon. But you're sitting so far back, I couldn't get back there to you because I know, Jonah. I watch you when I preach and I see that you listen. And Caleb, I notice that you and others, I don't want to leave out anyone. I appreciate our young people for the way they listen. Wait a minute. He who believes and is baptized shall be saved. Could I ask you a question? Have you done that? That's simple. Have you done what Jesus said you need to do to be saved? Simple part of Mark 16, he shall be saved. He who? Well, the word who's in there? He who believes and is baptized shall be saved. And if you'll do that, it'll change the way you study the Bible, but more importantly, it will change the way you live. If you've never been baptized, you need to do it. That's what Jesus said. Now, what does that mean? You're taken, you're buried in water. That's not the verse. Other verses teach that. Other verses state that emphatically, that it is a burial. We are buried with him in baptism. You ever had a cat to die and you buried your cat? How you bury a cat? Same way you bury somebody in baptism. Not with dirt, in water. He who believes and is baptized shall be saved. And then the rest of the verse, be thou full of faith until death. When you're baptized, they'll make you a child of God, headed to heaven. But you got to keep going. Be full of faith until the day that you die. If you haven't done that, if you've been baptized and then you're not faithful, it may be you need the church to pray for you tonight. How can we help you go to heaven? Why don't you let us help you go to heaven? Let us know we can help you by coming to the front right now. As together we stand and sing. Will you come?